Bing bong.
Who is there?
A pink mute button. What is this? What is happening here?
I don't know. I don't see anything pink on my screen. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Is Skype expecting or anticipating the upcoming Valentine's Day holiday? What? I don't.
Oh, Dan, it's best not to contemplate what it is that they think they're doing with Skype at these days. It is messy, messy, messy.
Well, my mute button's pink, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's been a long time since we talked, so, you know, a lot of stuff.
Nobody knows that. Time dilation. Nobody's paying attention.
I think people are
Time dilation is that a black hole space-time thing? What is time dilation? Or is that just a general term for time doing things?
Time dilation means time has slowed down.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes.
Like your eyeballs, they get larger. Time has slowed.
No. It basically, like, the closer you get to, like, a black hole, for example, then the slower time goes. So then if you were to go back from the black hole, more time would have passed.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because the black hole is eating your time, so there's less of it for you.
No, it's not. I don't know where you're going with this.
Explain it to me, Professor.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like time goes slower, so it's slower, but it's a localized phenomenon.
Mm.
So dilation, it's larger. You know, there's no
sure.
There's no time erode.
There's no time erode, just time dilate.
Mm-hmm.
Time erode parenthesis filter.
Parenthesis blur.
My weighting has been really off. It keeps giving me dilate. I never use dilate, so what the hell? My filter is like it's off the bottom of the thing. I don't even see it anymore.
Yeah, well, you gotta turn off that smart search in Nuke. It's very bad.
I don't think I turned anything on. It's weird.
No, they turn it on for you because they think you want it. And then you got to go in there and you got to turn it off. But they're just like, yeah, so you want this. And it's like, no, I'd rather just have a predictable thing show up when I type something, even if it isn't the first thing I wanted. And I have to go down like two to get to the dilate that I actually want as opposed to the one that's there. But I don't like having to like guess every time I start typing dilate what version of it I'm gonna get, but I don't know, that's a whole Nuke thing. But
you accidentally type dilate and then suddenly your time slows down.
I mean, it does slow down because then you're replacing the node that was there, but not in the same way as a black hole, although metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
black hole. Mm-hmm. What is a client if not a black hole?
Something else that ends with hole. But anyway, movies are fun from time to time
they
to watch
sure
and enjoy with your eyeballs and your ears.
Mm-hmm.
You ever enjoy a movie?
I mean, yes. We have enjoyed them on this podcast, as a matter of fact.
Your hesitancy just is funny to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, everybody thinks I don't like stuff, but I like stuff.
Well,
I'm allowed to like things.
Mm, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Things that have like black holes and stuff in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you don't like things. You're just critical of the things.
That doesn't mean I don't like it if I'm critical of it.
Yeah.
I'm very critical of Star Trek, and look how much crap I boost on Mastodon about Star Trek, or previously on Twitter about Star Trek.
Well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I muted the word Star Trek long ago, but it's fine.
I need my pain. But
yes,
anyway, like, yes, I can like a movie, even if it's a kind of a silly, fluffy little, you know, nonsense thing, then it's even better to like that sort of thing.
Well, it's against the rules of cinema. I think it's in the Academy of Rules as well that you're not allowed to dislike movies that star either Sandra Bullock or Channing Tatum or both in this case.
The Academy of Rules.
The Academy of Rules, yes. Mm-hmm.
No, but yeah, that's why part of the reason why I recommended this movie for us to do for this podcast is because I knew there, I had seen it already, and I knew that there was just no way that you would hate it because you like Channing Tatum in everything that Channing Tatum is in. So there's just no way to go wrong.
Is that true?
Name a movie Channing Tatum was in that you did not like.
I don't remember my opinion of Magic Mike, but I don't feel like I said I liked it. Maybe it was fine. I don't know.
I think you liked it. But we didn't do the sequel. And then, of course, there was his cameo appearance in Hail Caesar. But he does the dancing scene, and that's like the best part of the movie. So,
oh, yeah, for sure.
You can't Perfect. Hate on that. And you like both of the Jump Streets.
The Jump Streets are incredible, yes.
Yeah. So, like, what, like, name something you don't like him in.
Nothing comes to mind. I was gonna have to like go through his filmography and find something I didn't like. I bet that dog movie's not very good.
Yeah.
Logan Lucky's good. Mm-hmm. His small role in Kingsman: Golden Circle, which whatever is fine. Hateful Eight. I'm not sure his casting was appropriate there. Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, that, okay. You found the exception that proves the rule.
The one where he's got like dog ears and stuff, right? He's yeah. a loyal follower.
You want another pass at that one?
No.
All right.
Rural Gerber.
Yeah, he's, I don't know. That's not a good one. But you know,
I forget, you still haven't seen This Is the End, right? The, Rogan Franco one, right?
No, but you keep recommending it.
Well, at the very least, for the Channing Tatum cameo, it's spectacular. Okay. It's a good movie, though.
All right. Well, I will continue to ignore that. So, The Lost City. Anyway, I knew that you were having a kind of a busy time. Mm-hmm. And the two movies that were basically of equivalent runtime that I wanted to talk about were either The Menu, which I briefly mentioned last time, or The Lost City, which I had seen over the Christmas break at my mom's house. And I was like, well, I know that he'll like The Lost City, and it's light enough that it won't be too taxing if he's overworked. However, I know that he'll be pretty grumpy if he watches The Menu and does not like The Menu. So that was my thinking.
I don't get grumpy about movies. Well, maybe. I don't know.
You get a little grumpy. Whatever the equivalent of like hangry is for like sleep-deprived movie watching. Is you. Yeah.
But you see that.
Yeah, which is understandable. But here, watch this, enjoy it for a podcast, do it now.
Consume this information.
we must create content.
I would just tune it out and then read the Wikipedia before we talk to try and remind myself what happened.
Yeah. But anyway, I feel like this would be a better avenue because I feel like it's more engaging. There are some flaws with this movie that I don't really enjoy, but I was surprised to hear, at least in our limited correspondence prior to our recording, that you kind of liked one of the things about it that I don't like. Yeah.
What did you not like?
There's a lot of looped dialogue for extra punch-up jokes that's in this movie, and I don't...
Off-screen additions to the dialogue. Sure, yeah. I see that.
I don't love it. It is one of those things that I don't enjoy, because it's not... No one in the scene can react to that punchline. It's for the audience
Joe
to just hear.
Sound or yeah. Give him death.
No, but you know, otherwise, I mean, it's good. It's got like, you know, the funny little ha-has and your little things going on. It's cute.
Yeah, this movie would be extremely pedestrian if it weren't for a lot of the silly dialogue that takes place.
Very silly dialogue. And it is one of those things where even the stuff that's not looped is just all like very like fast talking kind of delivery. So nothing's like nothing's like a long elaborate setup for a joke, you know. It's all
they're
like
not holding for applause.
No like the whole thing with like Lovemore, it's Sandra Bullock's last name, and her character that she plays in the film is an author, and when Bowen Yang introduces her to her fans, the fans of Dr. Lovemore are the Lovemore heads. And if you don't laugh at that silly throwaway joke, then like, what are you doing on this planet? Like nothing, nothing like builds off of that. It's not like an elaborate like plot point or anything, but it's just very funny that you could just like slide that one in there. Or like Abigail Fairfax, it's a gender neutral name. Like that whole thing with Daniel Radcliffe.
So is everyone else in his family, and also, his assistants too. His
Julian.
Henchmen?
Yeah. And of course I liked Jack Traynor. He's just in his phone as what he does, you know, just like Stacey Butt stuff. But then it
Stacey Butt stuff was funny. Yeah.
It turns out his name is Jack Traynor. What a coincidence. And then you get like the just like very...
wasn't the other one like wasn't the full list? It was something like Kathy Mom, Jack Traynor and Stacey Butt stuff.
Well, there was something else like a masseuse or something in there. But it doesn't matter. They end on Stacey Butt stuff, which is where you should end, I guess. but yeah, it was good. And you have all the like other stuff where they're like critiquing sort of the genre at the very beginning of the movie, where it's sort of the hallucination of her writing it, the dream of her writing it. She's like in her mind palace writing this. It is sort of like a riff on Indiana Jones, like where do all these snakes come from? Who feeds them? What do they eat? Like, why are they here? How is it crawling on that guy's leg but not biting him? You know, all of that. And they kind of throw back to that a little bit in terms of like making jokes about the genre a couple of times. But for the most part, a lot of it is like there's this ridiculous thing. Someone will say something about how ridiculous it is, or just like throw it out there in the case of like any sort of like sexual innuendo, like the city of D. And D is supposed to be short for a longer made up, you know, name of a group of people. But the whole point is the joke is D, because you can say D for I don't know if you should bleep it, but dick, basically. You know, use your imagination, people.
I thought it was short for Dash, which is his character.
Yeah.
It is kind of amazing that he has this recurring, like, I don't know. Is this a phenomenon where the actor who does the cover of the book gets associated with the character in the book to the point that like they are like that has to be recurring as well?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of cliches in this movie, I feel like. The whole, like, you're so afraid of ever being hurt again, you've shut off yourself from everything, blah, blah, blah. Like, everything about her, like, journey is actually very paint-by-the-numbers. It's all about the jokes that surround it, you know? And same for him, where it's like, oh, there's more to him than you might think. There's, you know, don't judge a book by its cover model, etc. But it's the movie itself structurally is very basic.
Not even really that much happens. There's the book tour that goes south. There's some arguing. There's a kidnapping. Then there's a very slow escape, and then they find the place, and it's over.
Well, they find the police, and then they get captured again. And then,
I mean, sort of.
Then they go to the thing, and they find out the real treasure was love. And then they
love and seashells.
Yeah. Then they get rescued by the police again. So you know, there's that. I kind of wish that they did more with the let's say the B plot of Beth. So Sandra Bullock plays the lead. Lovemore, and Channing Tatum plays the cover model Dash, who is Alan in here. But the assistant, or sorry, the publicist, is played by Divine Joy Randolph, and she plays Beth, and she is funny, but she does not get to graduate to a level of being involved in the movie plot comedy aspect of it. She kind of just is there at the certain structural points. So it was kind of disappointing.
She has a brief humorous scene with Oscar Nunez, but that's about it.
Yeah. And Oscar Nunez is funny. Of course.
Apparently he's playing a character named Oscar in this movie. Big stretch for him.
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's the same Oscar from The Office?
Tough to say.
Has he played multiple Oscars in the past? I'm not sure I remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anything, it's an Oscar worthy role. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Who was he in The Proposal? I don't think he was an Oscar.
I forgot he was in The Proposal.
He's good in The Proposal.
Yeah.
Where is he's Ramon? That's right.
Sorry. There goes your theory.
Yeah. Sorry, Oscar. Yeah. No more Oscars for you. Just the one.
Patty Harrison's in this. She's funnier outside of this movie.
Know her from things?
Yeah, the was it Together Together is the movie that I first saw her in with Ed Helms, where it's about a pregnancy. Yeah. Anyway.
Sounds funny.
That's not super funny. But like, she's a comedian, so her actual comedy is good. But I don't feel like it's really representative of her work here in this movie that she just gets to deliver a couple of like throwaway lines. But like, watch her appearance on Z-Way or something like that, where she's kind of riffing on it. And she's funny. So, you know, it's pretty tame. Same for Bo and Yang. This is not like the comedy highlight of his career. I feel like there's just a lot of like, there's a lot of comedians tasked with roles that are surrounding our two main stars that don't really get to shine. But our two stars do get to be very funny. And I still maintain that Channing Tatum is way funnier than people would give him credit for. Because he's just good at comedy. Timing, delivery, everything. He's just good at it. Frustratingly.
It's interesting that they are... they're doing the thing that people do with putting, you know, comedians and things in all of the various roles here. But it doesn't feel like a Paul Feig movie or whatever, where there's like comedians in every role just being silly and doing stuff or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, in a Paul Feig movie, it falls victim to the fact that Paul Feig will just let everybody riff on things.
Just sort of stand there and riff and sort of over the shoulder cameras for like 3 minutes.
Yeah. But with this, it seems like there was a script that they at least filmed. And then they would modify it. I'm given to understand that there were other takes of things and that Channing Tatum did do some improv of lines, but they wouldn't just like sit there for like, you know, 3 hours doing the same scene over and over again. So there's comedy here and there's some life to it, but it's not as like, I don't know, there's like a you're beating a dead horse quality to some of the extended improvisation scenes in a Paul Feig movie. Sorry Paul, I like him as a person and generally many aspects of his films, but just like tighten up that edit, buddy.
I like him in that episode of The Office to do a callback to The Office where he's got the cat that rides on the dog and the mouse that rides on the cat that wears a little hat.
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to a talent agent to try and get signed, and he's got a dog and then a cat that goes on the dog and then a mouse that goes on the cat and then a hat that goes on the mouse. And then Ed Helms says, what do you name the mouse? And he says, it really doesn't make sense to name the mice. And then on the way out, the hat is dangling out of the cat's mouth. But anyway, he's funny. He's in his suits, doing his thing.
That's good.
Yeah,
I like that for him.
But yeah, so we're set up for success from the beginning because everyone loves Channing Tatum. And like I said, it's against the law to not like Sandra Bullock as well. Because she's what, America's Sweetheart or whatever we call her. She was in The Net, so she's grandfathered in forever. She's got that she clicked the pie icon of her hearts and snuck in through the back door.
Now, well, see, the thing is, I feel like her serious roles, which she mainly did, I think, in the 90s, or, you know, I guess Blindside or whatever. She is not as good in as her comedy roles, like The Proposal, like Demolition Man, like this.
I mean, she's playing the straight man in a lot of this stuff, so it's kind of still in, like, it's the same kind of thing. It's just the vibe around her changes.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It just, like, she needs to be in a comedy, is basically what I'm saying. And, like, even when she's playing a straight man or straight person in a comedy role, like, that works because she knows how to react and the timing is right and everything for her not, even when she's trying to not be funny, when she's trying to not be entertaining, when she's trying to, like, kill the mood in a film on purpose, like, that's what makes the comedy happen. And she knows that, which is good. Whereas some other people are not so good at that with comedy, where they're being the straight person, where they're just actually that dull. So I feel like it is actually a bit of a skill to be able to nail the sort of, like, anti-comedy of a moment, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. You got it's the straight man is an important role in any sort of back and forth because the contrast there.
Yeah. And so, you know, she gets it. She's playing off the scene. Everything. It's good. And it all pretty, you know, pretty much works. And I would classify the kind of comedy of this as not necessarily like The Proposal, but more like, you know, the Jumanji movie reboots or something. Like very light in terms of what they're going for here. And in terms of the action adventure aspect of this, it's all, you know, more than a little fantastical. Like Abigail Fairfax's vertical takeoff and landing jet that can fly to the middle of the Atlantic.
Are you saying that's not a real jet?
When I first watched the movie with Jason and my mom, Jason asked me, what kind of plane is that? And I said, it's CG. And he said, oh, but it's a CG of a real plane? And I said, no. No.
Are you saying people would just make things up?
Hard to believe in this movie where they made up an island and an entire culture of people and a fake history. Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
The audacity of some people.
I know. The nerve.
It's a reasonable assumption to just think that billionaires just have access to jets that we don't have. Like, we never even heard of that cool stuff.
Sure.
The people that made the Harrier jet probably went on to make something else, right?
I guess.
Mm. But like those ones that are in the Avengers movies.
What Quinn I'm jets. Interested in finding out, though, is since this was worked over many, many times in terms of writing this, even before it got to the screen, and even then it was punched up, is just like, what was the original script for this? Because apparently it was kicking around in production for 7 years, and Sandra Bullock had passed on it for being dated before. So, like, what was
it? I mean,
it
if you take all of the humor and chemistry out of it, like, it was probably just that. Like, it was a writer afraid of the world trying to find their way back and learn to love again and being caught on, you know, silly adventures. I mean, probably with some joy in it, but there certainly wouldn't have been this much.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think Radcliffe's stuff would have felt the same way on the page as it does when you cast him and dress him like that and surround him with cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but, and of course that little line that they add of, we rescued this little British man. We thought he was a kid, but he has a beard.
Yeah, it's good. Also, even him, like, you know, I heard you like cheese, so I got them all. It's just like, okay, this is why we have like 6 picnic tables covered in cheese. And then when the door opens, it blasts all the cheese at everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And he just gets to talk about the city. And she asks how they found it. And he said, well, it was on top of a lava dome and it rose up over time and that the de-exposed itself. And then, you know, she
said the whole city. He said, no, just the tip.
Just the tip. So he gets to say that stuff.
I mean, that stuff is trending a little bit too close to a certain type of comedy movie we don't make anymore.
A little too cute, perhaps.
I mean, it's I guess it's an Austin Powers bit to invoke Austin Powers for the second time today.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He seemed well suited for this because he's supposed to be playing like basically a Lachlan Murdoch type of my brother was the one who got the media empire and I was left with nothing. So now I'm going to do this thing.
Is there a Murdoch brother that does weird stuff?
I mean, I'm pretty sure, although I'm not going to put money on it, that Lachlan Murdoch hasn't kidnapped anyone to take them
Joe
to
Steele
a beta pilot.
Here is on the record saying Lachlan Murdoch hunts people for sport.
Yes. Yes. The most dangerous game. No, I don't think that is applicable in this context. But also speaking of other things that happened in that sort of like city set area, we had the whole Brad Pitt thing, of Jack Traynor. Yeah. So how do we feel about Jack Traynor?
It's good to see Brad Pitt out of the house and doing stuff. I like Brad Pitt. I mean, there's like two versions of Brad Pitt that you ever see anymore. And this is with a lot of the, you know, big name actors. It's just like there's this weird sort of casual effortlessness thing that he's got going on, which is basically like, I don't know, he's not even doing anything. He's just reading words or he's leaning against a pole and eating a mango or something and wearing a big silly wig. And then you've got, you know, serious Brad Pitt, but we don't see that version very often. But I enjoyed him. It was kind of funny to see him like not play against type, like when he actually jumps over the fence and he's kicking everyone's ass, like he's actually doing all the stuff and it's like extremely easy for him and he knows what he's doing. Like it's perfect. You expect him to like be thwarted by, you know, his ego or whatever it might be, but no, it's Channing Tatum being there just kind of squealing as people almost kill him and Brad Pitt you know, just sort of grimacing at him ever so slightly and saving him while also running through this entire place and killing everyone, which is great, which I mean makes the ending of his scene even better. He just catches a straight bullet to the head, which I loved so much. Mm-hmm.
And just like the blood everywhere and just the shock of it all, because it just kind of like you know, better movies have done this before, Psycho notably, where it's just like, we'll kill a big name star early on in the picture.
Psycho? I think you mean Executive Decision.
Sure. But anyway, the thing is, I don't think anybody thought that Brad Pitt would die. And if you watch the post-credit scene, he doesn't. But did you watch the post-credits?
I did. I waited for that. I figured there was something.
Yeah, he only uses 10% of his brain.
Yeah, he just switched it to the other side.
Mm-hmm. So he's 100%, which is 10%.
I don't know why he has resentment against them, but you know.
Because basically he would have pulled it off if Channing Tatum hadn't botched it.
I'm not sure that that's represented in the evidence we saw here. He was the one dilly-dallying, cutting the zip ties.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, it was Channing Tatum that everything kind of like slowed down. But whatever, you know, Channing Tatum should have caught that gun though, when Jesus here.
I mean, then we just would have had to go through a scene where he doesn't know how to use a gun.
No, of course not. But you know, it was good. I don't know, it was a fun time. I don't know how it saved any time to put her in a wheelbarrow inside of the chair rather than cutting her restraints, but you know, you kind of needed the comedy of it.
I mean, you know, running in those heels probably wasn't going to work out very well either. But the wheelbarrow was just fun. Although that's a bit from another movie, isn't it? The wheelbarrow? Isn't that from like a James Bond movie or something?
Not ringing a bell.
God, what movie is that at the end? Somebody calls in a favor and then they're like running away from being shot at in a wheelbarrow.
listeners, let Dan know so it doesn't drive him crazy slowly.
Yeah, I would course Google of many it, years. But I don't even have the brain power to Google whatever movie I'm thinking of. So
yeah,
but I'll stay on the one track that we're currently discussing.
I don't know, but yeah.
I mean, did you enjoy the Russian nesting doll of adventure story stuff that's going on here, where, you know, the writer writing about the story is now in the story, doing the story kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't really tread any new ground here or anything. I mean, but it was serviceable, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, I felt like whenever the movie did action, that it felt like it was competently executed, as opposed to some movies that I've seen where whenever they do action, they kind of like fall on their face because they're like, I'm a comedy writer. You can't expect me to do this. It was, you know, gratifying to see that they actually could follow through on executing action. And I think some of the good action scenes are, like you said, the ones where Brad Pitt scales the fence and beats up everybody. It's a pretty long scene, actually. The other action thing, of course, is the motorcycle stuff, where they got the choreography of that down, so that you could figure out the geography of that little field thing that they were in for when they do the little dress thing, and then the guy goes off the cliff, and then they start talking about how he's probably fine, and the wind did it, and all that. You know, I don't feel like I ever questioned their ability to make it seem actiony, as opposed to some other films where whenever it's like action time, it's just like, we gotta fake it. I didn't feel like they were faking it when they would do it. And they also didn't do the thing where you feel like it switches to a completely different directing crew for the action scenes and they ignore the comedy, because there was comedy woven throughout the action scenes. Like, you literally have Channing Tatum in the background of these well-executed action shots, like, you know, Bourne Ultimatum action shots, and then Channing Tatum's just like shrieking like a little girl in the background, and also, you know, trying to like dodge people falling over and stuff. So that's good. I feel like to have it feel like it is cohesive with the rest of the film, but also that you're not giving it short shrift, so that it doesn't feel like they're actually in any kind of like danger.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because he's like, you know, sneaking through trees and bushes and stuff, and you know, Channing is just like there behind him. It's like, yeah, you know, he could probably keep up just in a very non-stealthy way. He's just running around behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say the most disappointing part of the movie is when they get to the cave at the end, with the temple thing, the grave, the mausoleum. Yeah, it was just like, come on, is the Scorpion King?
So you're saying you did not like the visuals? You didn't like the emotional turn? What did you not like in particular?
Well, the visuals and the heavy-handed. Emotional turn, because
you didn't like the way like it became the narrative, the punctuation, like the end of her book, the summation of it all.
No, that was fine, but the part where it's like, you know, it's really about love and stuff, you just like hit the nail on the head a little too many times. They could have just backed off a little. But the matte painting being destroyed, or, you know, matte painting plus speed tree assets being destroyed by lava, it really work for me very well, because it doesn't feel like you're in a space so much as it feels like you're looking at an image. And so I don't enjoy that. I feel like that was kind of a little flat. And the tomb itself, while I know that Daniel Radcliffe was expecting, his character was expecting like a grand thing, and it was supposed to be, oh, it's just this little humble thing. It didn't feel like it was like a full 360 humble thing. It felt like it was, we built literally the surfaces the camera sees and then nothing else. And so that, I feel like, kind of doesn't help, where I would have liked that to feel a little more immersive for us as the audience there.
You mean like seeing beyond the mausoleum stuff?
Yeah, it just feel like it's in a place and not just like, we're on a sound stage and you have, you know, four pieces of foam and a foam ceiling that you painted. Like, just give us a little more to it, you know?
Mm.
Feels very, like, not to say confined, because they're actually literally confined.
Yeah. Inside. If you were to tell me that was a reshoot, I would believe you.
Yeah, I mean, it just, it felt a little... It felt a little like they didn't follow through as much as they had in other scenes. Like, the whole thing.
I guess you sort of would have enjoyed something kind of in between the wide shot and the medium close up shots of the mausoleum to sort of make the environment and the set feel a little bit more grand. Kind of like it felt arbitrarily constrained after. Like you kind of go like, oh yeah, you've got your matte painting wide shot here, and then once we're done with that, we're just in close ups the whole time, so it doesn't feel. Doesn't feel like a grand ending.
Well, the camera doesn't move with them through the space at all. It just is in the space in those like tighter shots or in that one particular viewpoint of the wider shot. And it doesn't feel like any of that really lives together. So I know it was probably expensive. They probably cut corners there. And it's more important that things like the tank motorcycle chase or tank Vespa chase or whatever that was that works and stuff like that they spend the money there, but it just felt like a little anticlimactic for how big that moment is supposed to be.
Speaking of, I'm scrolling as a Paramount movie. Why did I think this was a direct to streaming movie? It wasn't, was it?
No, it was in theaters, but it came out to streaming pretty quickly. And what's interesting about it is that this was a deal that they had with Epix. And Epix is MGM's, like, prestige TV channel, but mainly it's movies. They have a couple shows. But then Epix, during the acquisition of MGM, was turned into MGM Plus. So now when you start the movie on Amazon Prime, it shows you the MGM Plus logo, which is curious. So best of luck to whatever they're doing corporation wise with managing the stuff, but yeah, it was originally in theaters. It wasn't something that was direct to streaming. Now there is Shotgun Wedding, which is, I think, direct to Amazon.
Oh, that's the J-Lo and the Josh Duhamel.
Yeah. It was originally supposed to be a Cannibal Guy, but he got in trouble for...
Oh, Armie Hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Armie Hammer and J-Lo.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I still think that's bad casting too, but I don't know.
I don't dislike Josh Duhamel, but his presence does signal... Anyway,
yeah. Can we do that next week?
No, I don't. I don't know why I'm like biting my tongue. Like Josh Duhamel is going to find this podcast and just be irate with me.
I mean, I get the impression that I think there were some stories that he has a little bit of a temper. So I don't know. But
what?
But I find it hard to
isn't
believe.
Isn't he married to the Black Eyed Pea?
Fergie.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're still together, are they?
Oh, I don't know. I thought that was one of those Hollywood romances that's really made it through.
I mean, sure.
I don't keep up with these things. I should get Amanda in here.
Yeah, she would know.
Josh Duhamel. He's got an extra A in there. Duhamel.
Mm-hmm.
Duhamel. Oh, boy. Let's see. Spouse Audra. Yeah. Audra Mary. That's a new spouse as of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Fergie ended in 2019. Oh, yeah. He didn't wait very long. His child's name is Axel, AXL.
Oh, that's good.
Mm. Missing a vowel there, buddy. Interesting.
Well, his dad needed the extra A, so.
Is he from, he's from North Dakota. Interesting. I would have pegged him as a Florida.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't North Dakota the Florida of the North?
I don't know anything about the Dakotas.
Mm. Well, let's leave it that way.
I'm also very bad at geography, so just like, you know, it's probably my fault.
Well, do you want to guess where it is?
I would guess it is in the vicinity of South Dakota.
Do you think it is above or below South Dakota?
No, I don't want to go out on a limb here. This is not the time for me to really go out on a limb here.
Do you ever have to do that thing in middle school where you do a mind map? Not a mind map, but you have to draw a map from memory.
No, which is why I'm bad at geography. Oh. There are so many things like that that I talk to people and they're like, yeah, I remember when we did, you know, our times tables or something in whatever grade. I'm like, no, I never had to do multiplication tables. I don't know why we skipped that or something, but I just never did. And I didn't do maps. I never learned the capitals of all the states.
Did you not watch the Animaniacs?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. But there was no class where we're like, you know, memorize the capitals of all the states.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
That wonderful red state education for you.
You know, in general, it was pretty good. I think there was just like, there was a gap. Something happened around fourth, fifth grade that the curriculum just kind of fell off.
Hmm.
I should go find Miss Pepperly and ask her. She was cool.
Well, maybe she was too cool for school, which is why you don't know where North Dakota is.
No, she was a nice older lady, Miss Pepperly. She had like four F's in her name. I don't remember how to spell it.
Oh, well, hopefully you can track her down.
Yeah, I don't know if she's still alive.
I like immediately give up.
Well, first I have to remember how to spell it. Yeah, she's probably dead. Miss Lindbergh's still alive, though.
Mm.
I don't know about Miss Munzinger. She had to leave. The class behind us stressed her out so much she quit teaching.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, at least it wasn't you.
I think Josh DeMille had something to do with this. He might not have been here, but I blame him still, nonetheless.
He stressed her out and she quit teaching?
Yeah, with his casual cool guy attitude.
Mm-hmm.
California by way of North Dakota. The hell's that about?
I don't know. I don't particularly care for him.
You ever watch Casino? Las Vegas, the TV show. He was in that one, right?
I mean, supposedly he was. I didn't watch it. There was, what was it? He was in Transformers, the Michael Bay ones, right?
Several of them. Yeah.
Yeah. As I recall, he didn't really have a character so much as actions that he was to perform.
No, he was a sweaty guy in fatigues.
He was the military. So
special forces, obviously.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I know. I only brought up Las Vegas because one of the first people I met who actually like worked in Hollywood, man, was a Maya dude who actually like designed the like fake CG, like very CG looking casino that the show was based out of.
That's nice for him.
Yeah. He was nice. He answered some questions for us when we had questions about 3D things.
That's cool.
His name was Mike, I think.
Mike.
I don't remember.
Nah, never trust a Mike.
Yeah, never trust a 3D modeler named Mike. That's a little suspicious. Anyway, so back to the Lost City. I don't know, what else is there to say? It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really... It's not a complicated movie, as we've established. It doesn't have anything to really say. I mean, there's that flimsy message about Sandra Bullock being closed off from life and that she needs to open up and be a part of the world, and the whole thing about not judging other people and that she is the one closing herself off from everyone. But it's like, that's so not what anyone is here for when they're watching the movie. Like, you're all there for the little jokes, all their little jokes that are in here. And I think that is really the reason to watch it. And it is entertaining enough that you can watch it for only that reason, as opposed to it just being like two jokes and then like an hour and 40 minutes of nothing. So yeah.
I enjoyed that they made Channing a bit of a, like, he's not a manly man kind of guy, but they didn't like super duper emasculate him. He's just kind of like a regular dude. Like that didn't become like a recurring thing. You know, it was on the edge when he showed up to meet Brad Pitt with his neck pillow on and his AirPods in, but
and his little passport holder around his neck.
Of course, I mean, that's what you gotta do when you travel abroad, and his little suitcase that he was flipping all over the place.
Yeah, his Ramoa. He was very ill suited for the environment. I mean, he's supposed to be a model, so they kind of make him you know, not 100% manly, but at the same time, he, you know, is still someone who has brains. They just may not be the ones that are demonstrated when he talks. So, you know, like,
oh, that's when he's talking about how he always says the wrong thing. The chef guy in the back kitchen there.
Yeah.
Was great. What was he just like? I'm just trying to get those potatoes over
the
there, man.
Tomatoes. Like, yeah. Yeah. But the good part was when they first go into that little area and she and he says, oh, you should, you know, go to ancient Greece. And she's like, you know what the problem with that is? You can't go to ancient Greece. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I understand you don't want to travel. It's like, he doesn't understand that what he said is you can't actually go to ancient Greece, like, because ancient Greece doesn't exist in the past. But and then they have a little back and forth and she gets upset and leaves. And then he's talking to the guy who just wants the tomatoes. But before she leaves, he calls her a mummy, like a human mummy. And then the mm-hmm. tomato guy says, mummies are humans when she leaves.
Mm-hmm. So does Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
They could have done that one more time. They could have gotten three in there.
Yeah.
They should have come across, well, I guess they did come across a mummy, but they didn't. No, not really. It wasn't a mummy. It was just skeletons.
Yeah. Well, they could have done it, you know, three for comedy.
Yeah, missed opportunity to mm-hmm. have some mummies. Hire us to help punch up your script.
Like, how funny would it have been if they had slid that off and then there were the two people there? I mean, even if they were just exactly like they are, and then he just says, wow, human mummies. And then you could have...
Or just like, yeah. They're in the tomb there, and then he like turns around and finds that they mummified the couple's dog or whatever to go into the afterlife with him, and he could have pointed at him and been like, huh?
Yeah.
Not, you know, take it and turn it. It's non-human mummy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's the dummy now?
Or when they're trapped inside of there, he could have said, oh no, we're going to be human mummies.
I would have laughed at that. That was good.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, we don't need to be punch-up experts on this. This has been punched. This has been punched many times. So,
whose note do you think was the sequin onesie or whatever, jumpsuit?
I don't know. It's hard to tell exactly. I
cannot believe when he brought her shoes, she didn't say, you didn't bring me any clothes other than what I've got on here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's not that bright, so... Mm. I kind of get it.
But he's considerate, at least.
Yeah, but like, it's fine. It's like she needed to be in that sequin onesie running through the jungle for comedy.
It protected her from the leeches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure did. And he got all the leeches and then got to, you know, she got to pick the leeches off of him. They're sucking on his butt like a big old Jamba Juice. So, you know, there's that.
Did he have some sort of Jamba Juice type drink or something when he got off the plane too? Because that would be very good for his character.
I don't remember, but you could Photoshop that one in there, Dan.
Again, compassion and silliness. I like that he brought her a string cheese and mm-hmm. a Fiji water.
Yeah.
And apologized for not being a glass recyclable bottle.
He brought snacks. You know, and I think it's good that the movie also says that he pays attention to her and what she likes or needs and appreciates her in a certain way, even though he is very clueless, like in that opening scene where he's kind of talking over her and doesn't realize that it's really about her, but then tries to turn it around to be about her. And then she's not having any of it because now she's mad at him for being the focus point of something that's supposed to be about her book. And then she takes it out on him, but he's still trying to be compassionate about it in the scenes afterwards. So I felt like that worked really well. And you see that throughout the film. And a couple of times she's compassionate to him, but she still kind of looks down on him until towards the very end, which I think is, you know, a good source of tension between them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the... It's not exactly what you expected when you see him, you know, traipsing out there with his wig on and the big flowy shirt and stuff at the beginning there. So that's good that they...
To the final countdown.
Yeah, that does not... I don't know why. Why is that his entrance song?
Because they like Arrested Development.
Oh, is that in Arrested Development?
What?
Do they use that song in Arrested Development?
I can't tell if you're joking with me right now.
I'm joking with you. I've never seen an Arrested Development.
You've never seen an Arrested Development, Dan?
I have never seen an Arrested Development. I've seen clips, I guess.
Oh, my God. Way better than The Office.
I mean, I never watched The Office when it was first run either. I was forced to watch it, I think, during COVID lockdown stuff. But
well,
anyway.
if you are looking for like background noise or something to just like have on the TV while you're doing something else, throw on a little Arrested Development. You get to see, you know, Jason Bateman, Michael Cera, and everybody.
Dirty Cross.
Yes. They're all doing a good job. And you'll understand why the Final Countdown was used in that one particular scene. Because it's not the kind of thing where you would use that song because you like that song. You'd use it because you like the comedy of that song from this other scene in Arrested Development. But that's it.
So you say they're doing a riff. They're doing a thing.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a riff so much as it is an homage. But the other scene is not like this scene specifically. It's just about a ridiculous performer putting on a ridiculous performance. And so they kind of seem to have paired it up with that.
Is it Will Arnett doing magic? Is that where it goes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's what he puts on when it first magic shows. It's the Final Countdown. Gotcha.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
I think that was 2007 that show came out. But yeah, that's very, I can't think of any other reason why they would use the Final Countdown other than they like Arrested Development and thought that was funny. And so they used the same music.
It's a silly song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not supposed to be a silly song though, but once you see it in comedy, then you're just like, now I think about the Will Arnett scene, you know, so I'm going to use it here in our comedy scene here. It's not entirely original.
Shame.
I mean, it's fine. I still laughed. Okay. You can't put on the Final Countdown and then I won't laugh because I'll still at least think about the Will Arnett scenes. If not this scene in particular. So, and Channing Tatum does a good job. Like he's pointing, he's doing the stuff. He's flipping his hair. So, flipping his wig. So to speak, but yeah, it's good.
Now, what do you make of the very silly fake smartwatch thing? Is that just because they couldn't get rights to show an Apple Watch, or is that just adding to the heightened fake reality of it, like the airplane? And why did that not really come back around? Like, she didn't even go like, oh no, my watch is dead, or like try to call somebody from it.
Because it's movie technology, Dan.
Yeah, I know, but like they invented it for solely for GPS tracking her over the Atlantic.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, but see, it's not even GPS tracking. Brad Pitt asks if she has a device on her that has Wi-Fi, and they say yes, it's her smartwatch. But her smartwatch would have neither a cell phone connection nor a Wi-Fi connection on someone else's plane in the Atlantic.
I mean, you don't think a billionaire's plane has public Wi-Fi?
I don't think she joined the public Wi-Fi network of the billionaire's plane.
Well, what if it's one of those ones where it's like AT&T just does a piggyback?
Oh, you
public
think
so? Network on
you
everybody.
Think one of the thugs had like a unprotected Wi-Fi hotspot on them?
No, it's like he's got his Comcast installation, and then unless you disable it specifically, Comcast has that like you're just walking by the house, you can use you can have a little bit of Wi-Fi as a treat, shared kind of thing. What there's a thing, it's called that or whatever. Like you gotta opt out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one of the henchmen didn't opt out.
Or whoever installed the stuff on the plane. It's not on them to set up.
Well, I don't think the cable company installed the stuff on the plane because there's no cable.
You're saying he's so rich he's got a guy to install routers on his personal plane.
I don't know. I mean,
he doesn't have to wait in line with
You show me the manual for that plane, Dan, where it says
AT&T you versus like a regular human being.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, it was just a plot point. It was more interesting than like trying to piece together something from a puzzle or like investigating evidence of like where her tracks are, you know. So that's fine, but at the same time, I don't understand like the technological mechanics of that don't make any sense. Unless it's supposed to be like some sort of, you know, like Find My situation with an Apple Watch or something like that, where it's like, even if it's not on a network, some other device passes it and they can, you know, report back. But they don't go into that level of detail about any of this in the movie, nor do they really need to. So you've got that. All that's really important is that Beth takes her phone. And they made such a big deal about Beth taking her phone in the openings, that little opening bit where they're walking down the hallway, that I was like, oh, it's going to be important that her phone is gone. And then it was important that her phone was gone.
I definitely did not miss that part entirely.
You missed it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I was there for social media gal taking all the blurry pictures and tweeting and stuff. Mm-hmm. Hashtag Shawn Mendes.
Yes. Hashtag Shawn Mendes. But they, you know, it's fine. But it's like when you saw her writing in her computer program, and it was just like something that could have been in the net. It is like not, they're not paying for like.
Wasn't it Word?
No, it was like a weird thing with like a sidebar stuff. It was supposed to be like some sort of like Final Draft or Scribner clone. Mm. But these movies, like, they don't care. It's movie OS. It is not like a real thing.
I love movie OS.
Yeah, her watch isn't real. Like, her phone isn't real. Like, none of it's a thing.
Hmm. Next, you're going to tell me that island wasn't real.
The island wasn't real.
Was it not real, or was it just a different island?
I mean, there is no island by that name in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah, but the island itself is probably real, right?
They I'm sure they filmed at a location.
They are on an island, correct?
They are on, well, I mean, I don't even know if it was an island. It could have been Costa Rica. Ooh, like mainland. Fair point. We don't know.
Exactly.
You're the one who's supposed to be like on IMDb looking at their filming locations.
All right, fine. I'm clicking Dominican Republic, I see. Yeah, all Dominican Republic.
Okay, so they filmed the whole thing in Dominican Republic. But
which island?
What?
I said
it is an island. It is.
I was waiting for somebody to insert the like the bell sound effect. We don't have a soundboard or anything. Like, I was, you know, pausing for bell.
Keep pausing. pause with one hand and bell with the other. See which one fills up first. But so yeah, though it's half of an island. So they're there filming their stuff in the DR. And they got their made-up island that they're supposed to be on in the middle of the Atlantic, which is supposed to be some sort of like pseudo Canary Islands situation, slash something else. It's never specifically outlined. The movie says colonization is bad and Spanish colonization is bad, but it doesn't really mean anything in the context of this film because it's a completely made-up place and setting.
Talking about the one henchman who is actually a local, and he's like, I don't know, I wouldn't disturb the stuff or whatever.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it really helped us that it was a fabricated place. It does prevent us from going down the path of like it being about someone's actual, like, you know, cultural legacy. But does it help us to make up a cultural legacy for something in this case that isn't that far off of the kinds of things that they would do in the 80s, you know, with your Indiana Jones and what have yous, where you kind of have like a little insensitivity, shall we say, to the native populations of certain places.
Mm. You talk about with Radcliffe not treating them with much respect, but I mean, they seem to have.
No, I feel like Radcliffe not treating them with respect is hanging a lantern on it and being like, see, look, they're bad. And then when Sandra Bullock has her stuff where she says, hey, look, you know, bad stuff. Like, I feel like they are capable of articulating that colonial stuff is bad and that, you know, people are treating these indigenous people poorly, but the movie itself doesn't do anything with that really. Like, does it help us that it's a made up place if what you're saying is it's bad? Does it do anything for us really if we're just doing the same kinds of tropes? It's just not something specific.
Yeah, I don't know that this movie has the time or the energy to actually get into making a real statement.
No, and I'm not trying to like put that on the movie as something it needs to do, but I'm just saying it's one of those things where we really haven't gone past what the 80s would do other than saying like, oh, colonialism stuff is bad. Here's a made up place so nobody can be mad at us. Like, you know, does that make it better or worse?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's fine. But I mean, we're all just here for the D jokes, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I suppose. I mean, those were, you know, the most obvious of the jokes.
Mm-hmm. And the you know, the looping.
I watched this movie with headphones on because, you know, that way I could hear what people were saying at a reasonable volume and not wake up the child. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's why I didn't really notice the looping so much, because it's weird to watch a movie with headphones in.
Well, I would say,
I mean, aside from the fact that like people were off camera making jokes.
Well, that's the dead giveaway. They did a fine job at getting the audio to sound like it was the same as the scene. It's not like,
I don't know. It sure sounds like you're saying they didn't do a fine job.
No. They did a good job with the audio sounding like it was a continuation of the audio in the scene. But visually, when they cut away to someone talking off camera, you know that they weren't there talking.
I mean, it's better than doing it over the shoulder where you can tell that they're obviously not like moving their mouth in the same way that the words that are coming out of their
yeah head. Well, I mean, and there were a couple of those in here too, but the there's a that scene where she's waiting to get an airplane ticket at the reservation desk, like we're in the 1970s. Like that doesn't happen, but she's holding her phone, and so they decided to fill the scene with Patty Harrison's character talking to her over the phone as if they were on speakerphone. But no one in the scene is reacting to the phone. She's just holding a phone. So it wasn't originally written that she would be talking there. So you feel it because no one reacts to it. She's just saying things that are in voiceover.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I don't like that. I like it when people are reacting to the stuff in the scene. Like if they like had to fix a flubbed line of dialogue, or they change something so that it was a little punchier, but it was still where the joke was supposed to be originally, then I feel like it's a more organic thing to loop in that situation. But with this, where you're just like, we'll just like wedge in another joke, then I don't love it as much. That's my main criticism, really.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. But that's really all we got to say about this.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Good use of time. Not like Criterion Collection stuff, but
yeah,
it's fun.
It's good to see Channing and Sandy out doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My Letterboxd review was just, I watched a movie because I was very proud of myself for watching a movie. And my pretentious fake doctor cousin said, debatable, because he's an ass.
Sorry. Well,
this was an inappropriate use of time for me, who is not full of time to watch all of the great classics.
Yeah,
all of the most well renowned films for which I would have to concentrate and analyze.
And right before this,
mm-hmm.
the night before this, back in December, my mom and Jason had put on Bullet Train.
How's that?
Oh, so bad. Insufferable.
It really?
I hated it.
It's got so many people in it.
It does have so many people in it. I hated the movie. But Channing Tatum, Sandra Bullock, and Brad Pitt are in it. Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock are making, you know, smaller appearances, shall we say, than it's sort of the inverse of this, where they're sort of like, I guess, trading favors to be like in each other's movies. That was an interesting way to like bookend the two things, because man, that was not fun.
Not at all. It looked like a fun movie.
It gives that impression.
Hmm.
I would compare it to something like Speed Racer, which I also don't like. And I worked on it.
I have to clarify, in what ways would you compare it to Speed Racer?
Just like nonsense. Like, things don't make sense. The world isn't real. It just is, you know, stuff goes fast. It's stylized.
Mm.
Things are goofy, but not fun.
Goofy, but not fun.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe your reaction will be totally different.
It's unlikely, but it's curious that it was that joyless. Because I feel like I didn't see many people mention that they saw it, but I thought I saw a couple of people said they enjoyed it. I don't know.
I didn't care for it. You know, maybe I was just in a bad mood. But anyway, thus concludes the movies. Forever.
Forever?
Until next time?
Until next time.
Same.
Slug, or not slug, Leech channel.
Yeah. Same Tatum channel, same Tatum time.
Channing time.
Channing time.
Yeah. Channing Tatum. Timed him.
Sure.
Yeah.